Welcome to Future Proof, the marketing podcast from Kantar and Said Business School, University of Oxford. In each episode, we speak to industry experts about the changing landscape of marketing, sharing evidence and inspiration for the future.
I'm Jane Osler, EVP, Creative and Media Solutions. Our guests today are Graham Page, who's Global Managing Director of Media Analytics at Affectiva.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
And my colleague Vera Sidlova, who's Global Director Creative at Kantar. So welcome to both of you. We've got a really interesting topic lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about some recent research from Kantar that we did with Affectiva about how brands can actually create campaigns on the topic of sustainability that resonate with consumers. And there's some really fascinating learnings and some understandings that we'd like to share with you. So first of all, why don't we just start with you, Graham? Thank you for speaking to us today. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Affectiva?
Well, thanks for inviting me onto the podcast. Always happy to talk about what we do and particularly the topic of sustainability. So as background, I'm Graham, as you said, I run the media analytics division for Affectiva, which is part of a larger organization called SmartEye. And the work we do is really about helping businesses understand how people and consumers are feeling. And the way we do that is through an AI-led emotion AI technology, which looks at people's facial expressions to understand, if like, the emotional states that they feel without them having to answer questions, without having to probe for them and make them kind of, you know, interrogate them about how they feel. So that's used in a lot of different markets and areas, so including advertising development work, which is obviously where we partner a lot with Kantar. So always happy to talk about that. The tech is also used in some other sectors as well. So along with our SmartEye parent, we do a lot of work in the automotive sector, helping understand drivers' state of mind and are part of driver safety systems there. But widely used across a number of industries, but most relevant here is the work we do in advertising.
Great. And Vera, why don't you tell us a little bit about your role and also about how we work with Affectiva in our solutions?
Yeah, so I work in the creative team here at Kantar, and what we do is try and help our clients develop really great creative that helps them grow their brands. And one way of doing that is really making sure that they understand their audience and how they're reacting to the creative they put out. And our partnership with Affectiva is absolutely crucial in that, because as Graham just said, we need to understand how people are feeling as they watch the ads, and their faces often show what they won't admit themselves. And so actually looking at the differences between what they say and what their faces show is often a gold mine for really great insights into how we can make the ads better. And that could mean making the ad easier to understand, but it could also mean removing certain elements for better performance. It could mean cutting it down in a way where you can save on your airtime and actually have great ROI with a shorter ad. So there's just so many different applications, but really integrating that emotion AI piece into what we do is crucial for us to be able to help clients create effective advertising.
Great. Let's move on to the topic of sustainability now, because it's a fairly broad term, and I think different people understand different things by it. So there is a definition which is about, you know, the balance of society and the economy and the environment for long-term resilience. And so if we're looking at advertising, I think some of the things that we've found in our research is that people have got quite high expectations of brands. So for example, in sustainability matters, 63% of consumers expect brands to lead the way. So nearly two-thirds of people expect brands to lead the way. However, about the same amount, 64%, are actually skeptical of brands doing it just for profit. So Vera, what do you think is behind this conundrum? What do consumers really want brands to do?
So I think consumers know that they are each just one person in the big mosaic of the world, and alone it's unlikely that, you know, you or me would be able to tackle the problems of today, such as climate change or access to water, etc. And they do see brands as big players in these issues. So what they expect from brands is for them to do a good job, maybe limiting the negative impact they have on their surroundings. But also they do want to see brands innovating in this space and really do their best that they can for society. Now, where I think some of the skepticism comes from is often a disparity between what a brand appears to be like and what people know that the brand actually does. So there could be a differential between you actually saying you do certain things, but maybe certain parts of your supply chain haven't been optimized for a great environmental impact. And consumers are sensitive to that. They do read up on brands, they have high expectations. And so really there is a high standard put on brands in terms of having all of their ducks in a row when it comes to sustainability. I think another reason why consumers are skeptical is actually down to advertising, because we have seen, and I think we can all picture ads we've seen in the past, where brands are painting the world pink almost, like it's everything looks great, you're going to save the planet, save the future, everyone's going to be having a good time. And at the same time, we know that it's just not as easy. I think all consumers realize that the job of sustainability is not an easy job. And so when brands make it look too easy and put themselves as the only players in that, consumers are, you know, they see through it. They know it's not the only way to get things right. And so I think the challenge for brands is to be clear on what role you play, be transparent about where you're at, and tell consumers about how you can work together with them in achieving it, but not positioning yourself as the sole actor in this or overclaiming about what people can do in collaboration with you.
Yeah, just to build on that, I think there is an interesting opportunity in some ways for brands, not just, I mean, clearly there's a moral imperative for brands and businesses to be part of the solution and to be more sustainable. But there is an interesting opportunity in the sense that I think people are clearly worried about this issue. It's a big deal to them, but there's a sense of powerlessness that many people feel. So I think they have to look to businesses and to brands and to governments to help them make a difference. But I think any organization or any business that can help people act on those concerns that they have and feel like they're making a difference potentially has a significant opportunity, not just to make a genuine difference, but also to get, you know, some of the benefit from that in terms of consumer goodwill, because people really want to see something change and make a difference, but they're also feeling like, you know, it's just not something that they can do on their own. So Help is required.
So let's talk a little bit about the findings from the research, which was taken from large data set of link survey data, as well as emotion AI data. Vera, can you just let us know a little bit about how you went about doing the research and what the findings were?
We took a look at our database of the thousands of ads that we test together. And what we looked at first was how many ads actually contain either social or environmental messaging. And when we looked at that data, it was quite stunning because just a couple of years ago, it would be about 1% of the total ads we've tested. Only 1% would contain a message that would pertain to social or environmental issues. But nowadays, we're at 6%. So actually, over the span of about 10 years, we've gone from 1 to 6. So that's shows us that brands are talking about these issues more and more. What we then did is we tried to understand what it means to get it right in this space. So we have looked at all the ads that include this kind of messaging, and we've looked at how they perform compared to ads that don't have this messaging. And there we found an interesting aspect in terms of emotion. So if your ad includes a social or environmental message, it is going to be more intense emotionally, both in the positive and in the negative sense. So these ads, because they're tackling serious topics, they're more likely to inspire confidence, for example, but also guilt. So there is a certain charge that these ads bring that they have to wrestle with. And the thing that we did next is we separated the ads into top and bottom performers. So we've looked at the top 25% and the bottom 25%, and we've watched them all to identify what they have in common. And we've applied a behavioral science eye to it to understand what separates the top performers from the bottom ones. How are they positioning the sustainability messaging? What are they trying to get across? And why are they more successful than their counterparts?
Let's talk a little bit about why emotions are actually important in all of this, Graham. So what is the actual role for emotions in communicating sustainability? Why is considering emotion important, do you think?
I guess there's a couple of answers to that. I mean, one is that, you know, emotion is incredibly powerful in effective communication in general, and there's absolutely no reason why sustainability messaging would be any different. So, you know, creative content that engages people emotionally, that speaks to something that's important to them is always more powerful. And you know, that's, as Vera was saying earlier, one of the reasons why understanding how people feel as they watch content is really important for helping optimize ads. So sustainability messaging isn't any different in that regard. But perhaps more importantly, it's in its own right, it's a really emotive concept. It's a really emotional space that people feel strongly about. So, of course, people are going to feel equally strongly about the messaging and the content in that area. So getting it right, helping people to feel something which is both, you know, important to them and powerful, but which is also motivating, is obviously very, you know, very important. And I think to kind of build on some of the analysis that Vera was beginning to outline, one of the things that was really interesting in the data that we saw is that there is that difference between ads with sustainability messaging and ads without, in terms of, you know, generating strong feelings. But the top and bottom performers did perform in a different way. So the less effective ads with sustainability messages generated quite a lot of negative feelings. They would generate, you know, people were saying they felt guilty, but they also felt inadequate and they felt sad. And when we looked at the expressions that people show when they watch that content, we saw a really similar kind of parallel. We were seeing that the bottom performers tended to invoke more negative expressions. So downturn mouths, brow furrows, whereas actually the positive performers did something different. They did invoke some measures, some emotions like guilt, but they also had a more positive tone and a kind of uplifting outcome. They were showing more smiles, more expressions of joy in that ad. They were those sorts of ads. You know, they were saying they were feeling confident and inspired in a way that the bottom performers didn't. So I think there's a really interesting nuance here, in that it's not a surprise that people are going to feel guilty when the topic is sustainability, because we've, you know, government's business, but people as well all have a collective responsibility around the state of the world and global warming and so on. So people will feel some guilt. But I think what's interesting is the successful campaigns tend to be the ones that show a way out, that show some kind of positive outcome that people can act upon. And so it was really interesting that came through across this analysis of kind of the you know, the top and bottom performers.
That's interesting, thinking about the ones who've got it right. Let's just talk a little bit, Vera, about some of the ones who've got it wrong. So we've seen some examples recently of advertising regulators banning quite a few ads which are on sustainability topics because they are overclaiming, you know, saving the planet and that kind of thing. Why do advertisers get this wrong, do you think? Why do they get it so wrong?
There are two pieces to it. And one, I think, is relatively understandable because we know our brains are lazy and consumer brains are lazy. So to get your message across, you do need to keep it simple. And if you are trying to keep it simple, that means you're probably leaving a lot of things out. And some of it might not even be intentional. So you might be just trying to show how a particular product helps in a person's life. And in doing that, you oversimplify. And what you actually...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Get banned on is you not sharing all the fine print of how you produce everything or how a particular part of your packaging has come to be. And that is a really interesting tension because ads realistically probably can't go to that level of detail, right? It's very hard to imagine that all of the advertising around us would contain all the details about supply chains and production. And it would just probably be that all of our ads would last half an hour and it would be a lot of small print. So that is on one hand, a really tough standard that's being set out. On the other hand, we do need to recognize that some of the claims can be seen as misleading because you could be positioning a particular brand as having a net zero effect on the environment when in fact it might not be the case. So that I do see it as a space of tension where brands really have to find a middle ground where they're transparent about what they do, where they stand, but doing it in a way that, you know, a 30-second or 60-second piece of creative can deliver, or even a poster. So it is going to be a challenge. But what I'd say we've seen with some of the less effective ads is consumers are also able to pick up on this. So while they might not be able to pick up on things like how you farm a certain ingredient or how you've created certain packaging, if you're overclaiming in the sense that you position a particular brand as the solution to all of the planet's problems, they will pick up on that and it will generate a sense of skepticism. So I do think that brands have to think about A, sticking by the local rules they have to based on regulators, but they really need to put themselves into consumer shoes and trying to see it their way and where people see a place for the brand. And it could be that the expectations people have are actually a bit different from what some of the brands may have been claiming in the past.
I think there is a point here around authenticity. I think consumers are really good at spotting when brands are being inauthentic. You know, there are many brands, you know, now in the business which are based on essentially a sustainability premise, and those brands, you know, have perhaps in some ways an easier time of picking their messaging. But there are many brands that clearly have a long heritage that may have in the past not necessarily had the strongest track record on sustainability. So brands have to be, particularly in those situations, have to be humble. They have to acknowledge where they've come from, and you know, it's not credible for certain brands to suddenly be eco-warriors and kind of have this transformation, but they can still demonstrate that change has happened and that they have changed and that they are making a difference. So being realistic about where you're coming from, I think, is really important in finding that middle ground that Vera was talking about between overclaim and, you know, going into such detail that you know, everybody is kind of has lost interest.
I guess it makes a lot of sense that actually what brands have to do is not only find something that's authentic to them, but also hopefully differentiates them in the space as well. So I think what we saw certainly around the pandemic was a lot of ads that became very generic around, you know, we're here to help and things like that, which actually aren't necessarily unique unless you back it up with some really kind of solid, you know, information or action that the brand is taking. So brands need to avoid going too broad on this topic, otherwise it is unbelievable. So let's talk a little bit about the case studies that we put together and that we explored as part of this research, which incorporated some psychological levers, and we identified which ones work best. Vera, can you just talk about a couple of examples there?
So we looked at the most effective ads with sustainable messaging through a behavioral science lens, and we identified 5 levers that a lot of these ads often included. One of them was giving people a sense of control. So rather than passing judgment on what is good sustainable behavior or not, the ads were showing something that was basically giving the choice to the consumer about how to behave, and that was framed as an inspiration rather than a signposted behavior as either sustainable or not. Another lever we saw was nature connectedness. So it was showing that we as people are connected to nature, we're one with nature, and trying to use those elements to motivate people to behave more sustainably. Another one that we saw that I personally found really interesting was mitigating present bias. So we do know that a barrier to sustainable behavior is that many people feel like the effects of climate change will be felt only in the future, and so they can't see the impact of the choices they make today soon. And that's why they actually make other choices instead that could be acting on price or convenience. And we've seen some ads that actually acknowledge that and try to, through creative, they try to show the importance of making those actions today so that the world's a better place further down in time. So those are just 3 I've mentioned of the 5 that we've looked at. And we then said, well, let's look at some ads that have these and test them and look at case studies. One of my favorites was the 7th Generation Trees and Bees, which is an ad for recycled toilet paper. And it uses the famous American comedian Maya Rudolph, who sings a song about the importance of using recycled toilet paper. It's just brilliant. It's funny. It doesn't have any of the doom and gloom and guilt that we would see in some of the other advertising we've looked at. And it really resonated with people. So it left them feeling good, confident, inspired, and really something like you can do. It's giving you that sense of control. Another ad that I personally found really inspiring from the case studies was an ad that wasn't trying to position itself as sustainable at all. So it didn't make any references to sustainability, but it was an ad from the butter brand Lurpak, and it was showing how people can get more creative in their cooking. And it was this really stellar piece of creative work, really well produced. And the vignettes of people getting creative cooking were actually vignettes of people preventing food waste in their homes. So using a back of the cupboard onion and saving it through a recipe and making a frittata, for example. There were all these examples in the ad, but without making any references to either you needing to be more sustainable or the brand helping you to be sustainable. So it was a very subtle ad in that manner. But what we found was interesting about that one is that it resonated with people differently. So based on your attitude towards the environment, and we'll probably talk about this a bit more later on, this particular ad that didn't make reference to sustainability resonated very well with people who actually are dismissive about behaving sustainably in the everyday. And that to me showed that you can get yourself to resonate with anyone if only you get it right with your creative choices. And so if you understand the people you're speaking to, you can get your points across in a way that resonates, that doesn't feel preachy, and that they actually really enjoy watching. So that was a bit of an eye-opener for us, I think, because we have a tendency of sometimes feeling that some skeptics cannot be reached ever, and this showed that you can do it with the right creative.
So Graham, what should advertisers think about then when they're developing their creative content and the theme is sustainability? What do they need to take into account?
I mean, I think one of the things that came through for me from both the broader analysis and looking at the case studies was, I guess, the importance of telling accessible narratives. I think there is, as we said earlier, it's easy to be quite kind of doom and gloom about this topic, and it's entirely understandable because it's serious and it's important. But that does risk, I think, that kind of element of rejection and guilt that we talked about earlier. So to me, you know, some of the most successful cases were the ones that were tackling the issue via more accessible narratives, be that through, say, the humour that Vera was talking about in the Seventh Generation spot, but also other things. There was a great co-op spot that we looked at that told an accessible story of kind of an older gentleman leaving his house, kind of experiencing the joys of nature, but also it showed him recycling plastic bags at the co-op store, and, you know, the staff were kind of acknowledging him, and he was kind of, yeah, rewarded in the sense for being out, but also for good behavior. And it was really interesting in that, again, it's just it's a much more accessible way of dealing with the topic. It's something that people can identify with. They could identify with him and the behavior. So I think that sort of approach, which, you know, uses positivity, humor, accessible storytelling, I think is potentially much more powerful than something that's much more of a rational argument. Because I think that this argument is perhaps difficult and leads to potentially rejection. More accessible storytelling, I think, is particularly for people who are less committed to the cause, or less kind of, for whom, you know, sustainability issues are less front and center in their everyday lives, particularly when shopping. You know, that more accessible, memorable storytelling can perhaps be more powerful.
So Vera, another thing that fed into this research was a segmentation. So looking at how we understood different types of audiences and their views about sustainability and how that fed into their reactions and insights around the advertising. So just tell us a little bit about the segmentation.
The segmentation was developed by the Sustainable Transformation Practice here at Kantar. And what it really does is it looks at how people are engaging with sustainability in their everyday lives. And it splits people into four groups. So we've got the actives, and I think of them as those that are convinced and they do everything they can most of the time to behave sustainably. Then we've got the believers who, you know, try to do as much as possible, but there might still be some limits to their engagement and they occasionally might not do stuff in a sustainable way. And then we've got the considerers who are aware of needing to do more, but again, face a lot of barriers to actually achieving that. So they're aware, but they often might make other choices that could be on price or because of convenience or accessibility. And then we've got the dismissers. And the dismissers, they might do some stuff like recycle regularly, but how they differ from the other groups is that they don't feel particularly keen to do more. They feel like what they do is already enough, and they don't think of sustainability as something that should drive their own behavior change. We've recently published the Kantar Sustainability Sector Index, where we look at the incidence of these groups, and they're quite consistent across the world in terms of regions. So we see similar proportions around the world. What I found interesting in the advertising research we've done is just how differently these groups react to ads and how differently they feel towards different scenes and messaging when it comes to sustainability. So for example, in the co-op spot where we see a man going to recycle soft plastic, that spot uses a lot of nature cues and nature connectedness cues. And when we split the facial coding data by the segmentation, we saw the dismissers were left completely untouched by this spot. It just didn't evoke almost anything. But when we looked at the Lurpak spot, that's where the dismissers really were smiling. They were really happy at what they were seeing. And that was an ad that didn't actually put a sustainable claim forward, but it was still modeling sustainable behavior. So it was inspiring without preaching or being explicit about what it was asking them to do. So I think the biggest learning for me is to really know your audience as a brand. And I don't think of that at the level of the market, but really at the level of your target group. How are they feeling about sustainability? What do they currently do? What's their level of engagement, and tailor the creative choices and the levers you use to that so that you can resonate and kind of meet them where they're at, as opposed to coming at it from a pedestal of I, as a green brand, tell you to do X.
You've been listening to Future Proof from Kantar and Saïd Business School. For all episodes and more information, visit kantar.com or oxfordfutureofmarketing.com. If you enjoyed this, please leave us a rating and a review and subscribe within your podcast app so you never miss an episode.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.